Bengals Nation, is the last week of October. Okay, this is the Halloween edition of Bankless. Did you wear a costume this week, David?
No, we have done costumes every other year. We are not doing costumes this year.
Oh, wait, you're not in your costume? I'm in my costume.
Are you Ryan Sean Adams?
No, I'm an ETH bag holder. You can tell by the...
Wow, we're wearing the same thing. One of us is going to have to change.
Yeah, I guess. Well, you know, we can both be ETH bag holders. We live in different cities, so, you know, no one will be worried about that. A lot of things to talk about, but one of the things we're going to talk about is something a little bit spooky, maybe, David? Do you like that? AI agents.
It's a little spooky.
Yeah, they're on-chain and they're off-leash. We once had bots, now they've like evolved into these things called agents. And I think both you and I earlier this week were trying to figure out whether this is just like a new meme coin game that we could just like dismiss as noise, or whether it was a big freaking deal. So we'll talk about what's going on in crypto with AI agents this week.
Yeah, Base, Ethereum, Solana, they all have their AI agent platforms active in their block space. So I think this is going to be a theme across chains. Meanwhile, Bitcoin inflows are flowing. Someone has opened up the floodgates. All of this ahead of the U.S. election, which has increasingly pointed towards a Trump victory. Obviously good for crypto, and the markets are currently reflecting that.
By the way, I'm so happy that this is the last roll-up where we're talking about the election, hopefully.
Well, the election's going to happen, and then the next roll-up, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it, but we want to like talk about it. Like, who's going to win?
Yeah,
it feels like
win,
the same thing every week. Also, the blobs continue blobbing. The big question is, what happens if Ethereum blobs go into price discovery mode? Can this fix ETH this cycle,
Can we get
David?
The burn back? Meanwhile, there is a governance vote in Microsoft, shareholder vote about whether or not Microsoft wants to buy Bitcoin and follow MicroStrategy's footsteps and put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. So we're going to talk to you guys about the vote. And also, more Tether FUD. This time, the FUD is making it into the weekly rollup. We usually ignore the Tether FUD. This FUD, we're going to talk about. But maybe it's, you know, maybe it's the same as all the other FUD. Who knows? We're going to get to all of this and more. But first, a message from our friends and sponsors over at Legion. We once did a whole entire episode, Ryan, about how this cycle is cooked. Remember that episode? And the whole idea there was that, man, these points, these retroactive airdrops, these Sybil attacked airdrops are just completely broken. Honest users who are just enjoying their time using their favorite protocol are not getting rewarded with any of the tokens because bots are just, you know, front running them. Legion is trying to make public token sales possible again thanks to MiCA compliant merit-based ICOs.
Oh.
We have asked for the ICO movement to come back. The ICO era of crypto 2017 was rife with frauds, but the ICO as a mechanism, I think, is wholeheartedly like understood to be like,
done well.
It can be done well. It is a good mechanism. It allows people to, you know, invest in early stage projects. And that is what Legion is trying to do, is trying to connect value add network participants, aka qualified investors who projects want on their cap tables, with the most promising crypto projects, as in not the frauds, not the scams. They have a couple of different tools that they use to do this, like an exploitation resistant reputation system. So it scores users based on developer activity, on-chain history, social clout, unique achievements. So it's kind of like your resume as an investor, but as an individual, which is kind of cool. So if any of this interests you, if you are either a project seeking capital from a more distributed pool of investors, or if you are a potential investor who wants to invest in early stage startups, check them out. Bankless.cc/Legion.
Got to mention, of course, this is not available to U.S. users. And
God,
everyone
knows, seen that coming.
Everyone knows who to thank for that. But MiCA compliance, which is like a big step. So go check that out. I'm actually pretty bullish on this being a new mechanism moving forward.
Yeah.
All right, David, speaking of bullish, Bitcoin, tell us about the prices, because I've heard that it's creeping towards all-time high. Actually, you know what? We should preface this by saying we are recording the weekly roll-up. This is something we don't usually do, but we are recording the weekly roll-up a day early. So we're actually recording on Wednesday, October 30th. And this is because, you know, like, I wanted, you know, Halloween off. I got some stuff to do that day. So this could be completely out of date.
Got a costume
prices
put on?
Could be completely out of date by the time you guys get it on Friday morning, November 1st. But
usually prices are 12 hours stale. They are coming into you guys 36 hours stale. So the fact that we are doing them at all is
okay. Yikes. So we don't know. For the listeners listening to this, whether we hit Bitcoin all-time highs or not, at the time of recording, we're real close, though. What is it looking like?
According to CoinGecko, the all-time high of Bitcoin is $73,740. This week, we hit $73,570. So on the Kraken chart. So the Kraken chart got $200 away from Bitcoin all-time high. That is how close we are. We have since fallen. We are currently at 71,700, but Bitcoin is up 9% on the week. So it's a really good week for Bitcoin. We are flirting with all-time highs. Bitcoin is less than $1,000 away from all-time highs, which is pretty damn cool. Ether also had a good week. Start of the week, 2,475, up 7.8% to where it is now at 2,670. Got over 2,700, fell back down a little bit. And it is also just a few thousand dollars away from all-time highs, just the same as Bitcoin. Both are just $1,000 away from all-time highs. You know, so close.
Wow, that would be funny if it didn't hurt so bad. But I guess, you know, ETH bag holder costume on the week for Halloween. We should just finish the pain and talk about the Bitcoin ratio here. What's that looking like on the week?
0.0372. So it has continued to go down.
The interesting thing, if we want to compare Bitcoin to Ether, is on March 12th. So this was sort of a last almost all-time high moment. Maybe this was an all-time high for March. I don't recall. Bitcoin was 69,810. At that time, Ether, the asset, was 3,879. Okay, mm-hmm. So like ratio was a lot higher. Bitcoin was maintaining its pace, or Ether was maintaining its pace with Bitcoin, I should say. Today, the delta is like we're at around the same amount, around $70,000, and Ether is only 2,500 or so. Yeah. So a big difference. Why is this? It's just like Bitcoin ETF adoption has been really strong.
Really strong. I think the Bitcoin brand is like really penetrating. And also, like, look at the polymarket odds. Donald Trump.
Trump
bump's very large. Yeah. Let's go look at the Bitcoin ETF flows. Let's go back to the 23rd of October. $192 million in on the 23rd. On the 24th, $188 million in. On the 25th, $402. On the 28th, $480. And yesterday, the 29th, $870 million net inflows into the Bitcoin ETFs. Almost $1 billion in a single day. We are at all-time highs in AUM across the Bitcoin ETFs. And all of this is just like the 2 weeks leading up to the election, kind of tracking the Trump odds on Polymarket and all the other prediction markets. As Trump is going up in likelihood, Bitcoin ETF flows are going up. Bitcoin price is going up. So the fact that Bitcoin has kind of turned into a Trump election derivatives market is working in Bitcoin's favor.
So this chart that we have on screen is really interesting. So this is indicating that the ETF is actually leading the spot market Bitcoin price. So here's a chart of ETF holdings are breaking out before Bitcoin. And you could see this in orange. This is US Bitcoin spot ETF balances. And it just shoots up. And then kind of the Bitcoin price is following. So maybe there's some Trump bump here. But maybe there's also, it's just the ETFs have been incredibly successful products. And this is some institutional demand. I know when we were talking to the BlackRock folks, they said a lot of the demand for Bitcoin ETFs is just like basically already crypto bullish people who are just sort of, you know, right, moving their 401ks. They already own Bitcoin or they're already in crypto and they're just like moving some of their retirement accounts from the Grayscale Trust into these products, or just like, you know, from other stock indices or all other mutual funds into this. But I'm not sure. I think this could be like a new source of demand here potentially going to the election. I mean, the flows are just incredible here.
Yeah, that all of those statements have been about the past. Historically, all of the inflows to date have been this way. The hope is that just because all of, you know, crypto natives are putting Bitcoin in their retirement accounts, the hope is that we're just doing that first ahead of all the big money that we thought was coming in. It turns out all that big money has not come in yet, which is, in my interpretation, bullish because they haven't come in yet.
Mine
and
too.
So that's, they can still come in.
Well,
there's,
I mean,
still
look at
more
this
money out there.
So you know how big college endowments are. University endowments are just like silly large in the U.S. This they're starting to come into it. There's just a trickle, but this is Emory University reported $16 million worth of Bitcoin, the first endowment to report a Bitcoin ETF position. This is from Eric Balchunas. So endowments kind of trickling in. It's only like a small fraction. It's like less than, far less than a percent of the total AUM,
but something
to see that start to trickle in is notable, and that is net new demand. You have to say that. I mean, certainly these endowments are not crypto natives.
It's interesting that they own 2.7 million shares of GBTC, as in grayscale BTC, which to me lends to the idea that they've actually been holding this for a while. Because why would you buy GBTC now? Why are you buying the one that has a 2.5% fee when all the other ones have like a 0.2% fee? So to me, Emery actually probably has been holding GBTC for a long time.
Well, now they're reporting it. So this is a new report. Yeah. They're suddenly reporting it, maybe. I guess it's not saying how long they've actually held it for.
Right. And because they're learning that they're holding it.
This is all reflected in the Bitcoin dominance chart. Look at this, David. Yeah. We are at 60% Bitcoin dominance. For people who aren't familiar with that metric, what is Bitcoin dominance? That's basically like Bitcoin as a portion of the total crypto market cap, and it's 60% of the value of all of crypto is Bitcoin right now.
So the value of all crypto is 60% contained by Bitcoin. Bitcoin dominance has historically been downtrending over the years, but it goes in cycles. It goes up, goes down, tends to go down, but reaching 60% where it once was is definitely a pretty big milestone.
It tends to go up in the early innings of a bull market and then go down in kind of the second part of a bull market. So what's the total crypto market cap on the week?
Coming in at $2.5 trillion, hitting that $2.5 trillion mark. We haven't been here in a really long time. This is what happens when Bitcoin goes up 3% or 4% or 5%. Like, that $1 trillion number moves quite a lot. I don't, it doesn't really matter if Doge or SHIB or any meme coins go up 3,000%, it just doesn't matter. But when Bitcoin goes up 5%, then you really see that reflected in the total crypto market cap. So next stop, $3 trillion. You think we can get $3 trillion by the end of the year?
Look, depending on the election event, like results, 100%, I think so.
Yeah, I think you could get there before December.
Yeah, I think $3 trillion is bearish for all of crypto.
For the end of the year, you mean?
Yeah, for the end of the year even.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just
Okay, all right. $3.5 trillion.
Do I think I think that's 3.5
trillion by the end of the year.
Yeah, I think that's
add
totally
on a trillion dollars.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well,
if Trump gets elected,
right? Sure. I mean, if Trump gets elected, I just don't even know what the ceiling is. Like, I think, I mean, what it does a lot. We'll wait for that next week. We'll wait to talk about that, all the implications of that once we know.
For the record, the all-time high of the total crypto market cap of crypto is just over $3 trillion. So we are $0.5 trillion away from the all-time highs for the industry.
What are some movers on the week, David? Some meme coins at the top here that are contributing to that $2.5 trillion? What are we looking at here?
Three big movers of the week. SPX, which broke into the top 100. It fell out of it at the time of recording, but it was up 24%. Popcat up 24%. And then Doge, which actually does have a meaningful market cap. I do have to take back what I said earlier. The market cap of Doge is $25 billion. And Doge is up 20% of the week on the week. I think people are using Doge actually as Trump exposure, because Elon Musk, who's very pro-Trump and is very like much aligning himself with the Trump brand, keeps on tweeting about the Department of Government Efficiency, because he wants to make the government more efficient, and those initials are Doge.
Right.
And so if the idea here is, if Trump gets elected, then Elon has more exposure, and Elon keeps tweeting about this D-O-G-E meme. And so as a result, Doge is up 20%.
So this is another election exposure play.
Election exposure, yeah.
In addition to being a meme coin play, of course, because Dogecoin is a blue chip meme coin at this point.
Yes.
And these other ones you mentioned, they're newcomers.
Oh, it's the first blue chip meme coin.
Yeah. Wow. Blue chip meme coins now. We're that old in crypto that we have these blue chips, the must invest meme coins. Let's talk about layer twos. And this layer two update brought to you by our friends over at Mantle, who are just a fantastic layer two that you got to go check out. There are a few notable things on the week. One is this, David. For the first time ever, Base led all chains for total stablecoin transfer volume in a single day. Folks who might be hearing that might not think that's significant. Let me tell you, that's pretty significant.
Pretty significant.
Because Tron has been the big stablecoin chain network for a very long time, for the past, like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, and they have had a commanding presence. And for an Ethereum layer two to start to exceed that in transfer volume is pretty bullish, I think, for the layer two ecosystem.
Yeah, totaling $18 billion in stablecoin transaction volume over that 24-hour period, accounting for actually just 30% of all stablecoin transfer volumes. Yeah. And so even though it was a number one chain, only accounted for 30%. Solana coming in at second at 25%, Ethereum layer one at 20%, followed by Tron at 16%. Unfortunately, the screenshot that we have is like kind of stacked right over the data, so we can't see the recent era. But it is nice to have base dethrone Tron. But then also you got a Solana's at number two at 25%. I really want to see that recent data.
So Solana transfer stuff has been pretty impressive. Of course, all of the base stablecoin volume is in USDC. Like 99%, nothing. 99.9%.
Yeah. Also in the layer two landscape, Starknet is breaking some records, multiple records in the transaction per second category. So the fastest layer two transactions that we've ever seen on Ethereum. Starknet sustained 127 transactions per second for 24 hours with a peak TPS of 857 transactions per second. Where did all of this transaction activity come from, you ask? I'm so glad you asked. Came from this on-chain game called Flippy Flop, which actually looks pretty cool. A bunch of humans compete against bots over kind of this like tile space. And it's just, it's an on-chain game. And so a lot of the actions on this game are made on-chain. So like if you move left or if you do something, you take an action that turns into a transaction. This is coming from the world of on-chain games, fully autonomous worlds. There's this whole category out there. We did an episode with the Lattice team a while ago about this concept. You really need a ton of scale in order to make this happen. Starknet, I think, is actually the first chain that really has been able to pioneer this because they're the first chain to be able to actually host this kind of activity. But in addition to the just the sheer amount of activity going on Starknet, a bunch of components just really had to come together to make this happen, because you go onto the flippyflop.gg, I think, website in order to play this game. And, you know, you're going to have to, it's a crypto game. You need a wallet. You need activity, right? You need to do all these things. Well, there's account abstraction to abstract away a wallet. There's a Paymaster integration to abstract away gas fees. There's this thing called cartridge controller, which is kind of like gamertag infra for Starknet games. Session keys, which is where actions can turn into on-chain transactions without a wallet popping up. So if you're doing like 857 transactions per second, like there's not pop-ups happening and you're like, approve. Like, right. No, you're just making movements so the and way decisions a game should in the game.
Be, right? Yeah. Just the way a game should be.
And then lastly, pass keys for eliminating C phrases and easy onboarding. So you're seeing a lot of this like very modern tech being finally like aggregated together into a unique experience, which allows users to play this fun game and break records in the layer two transactions per second space.
David, I think we're going to be breaking records a lot in the remaining 2024 as far as L2 TPS, right? It's like more and more high throughput L2s are coming online. What's notable about this is it's not a Validium, so all of the data availability is actually stored on Ethereum as well. So it is a true Ethereum roll-up. And Sriram from Eigenlayer offers his congratulations to Starknet and the founders of Starknet. And he said, this is a rollup using ETHDA. How is it possible? This rollup only posts state diffs and games with high update rate are exceptionally suited for extreme compression. I don't fully know what all of that means, but
It means a bunch of transactions, a bunch of actions are happening, and a lot of them are happening all at once because that's what the TPS is. And then every once in a while, the Starks compress and then they post the state root, which is basically how rollup works.
On-chain games are very on the frontier, I would say, at this point in time. Yeah. Starknet's certainly doing that very well. So the question is, with all of these L2s consuming all of this Ethereum block space, I really should say blob space, because that's kind of the fast lane that all of these L2s are using for data availability. The question is, when are we going to run out? When are we going to hit the thresholds and supply limits? And it looks like we're getting kind of close, David. Actually, Tim Robinson put together just a fantastic analytics tool that kind of like projects what this could look like in the future. Because right now, this has been part of the question, L2s are not paying very much for blob space. Why? It's because you only pay for Ethereum blob space when the threshold supply is reached, when there's contention, when everyone wants it, basically.
When there's less supply than there is demand.
Exactly.
Right now, there is more supply than demand, but just barely.
Just barely. And we've actually crossed the threshold like mildly.
Recently, last week.
I don't know, four different times now, just to spike up, you know, and then it goes back down. So
the last spike up, which was last week, was the largest spike.
Well, did you get a chance to take a look at some of the analytics that Tim put together on this of what this could look like? Both in, like, you can adjust your assumptions as you want. One assumption that Tim goes is the far future, where he looks at Ethereum's destination point once it adds peer DAS And once we get to a place where Ethereum can support 10,000 transactions per second, so we've not only added Pure DES in a future hard fork, but we've also kind of like updated the amount of blobs per block to 16 megabytes. So that is probably a medium to longer term future. I don't know if this is like 3 years out. But basically, if Ethereum is operating at 10,000 transactions per second, it would actually burn 6.5% a year. L2 transactions in that scenario would cost 0.06 cents per transaction, but you would be burning 6.5% ETH supply a year at the current ETH price. It's really interesting how you can kind of like model this out, but it's basically the idea that you can have cheap transactions. If you have a lot of them, it would still burn a whole bunch of ETH, which begs the question of like, you know, this whole ultrasound money meme has kind of died down because ETH hasn't been deflationary for the past, you know, 6 months or so, or like longer. And, you know, everyone's saying, well, it's not deflationary anymore. So that just like decreases the value proposition of Ether, the asset. And that's why it's trading so poorly this cycle. Well, what happens if it starts to produce a whole bunch of cash flow because blob space thresholds are exceeded? Does the market then reverse? Is that like life back into ETH? What's your take on all of these things?
Can we actually just open up the simulator? Because I think it's really cool. So let's put in some assumptions here. Let's put in a number of rollups, call it 20 large dominant rollups. I think there's going to be many more, but like in the fat tail, it's called 20 fat tail rollups.
Okay.
Transactions per second on the rollups. Starknet was just sustaining 127 for a day. Let's put in 100 transactions per second.
Okay.
And then target blobs per block. Right now we are at 3, but we're going to estimate in the future. So let's go to 6. Let's go to 6. We'll double that. We'll get to 6 sometime next year. And then max blobs per block, 12. If you put those numbers in, these are my assumptions.
With the ETH price of 3K now?
With the ETH price of 3K, yeah, which is like, we'll get there. We'll get there soon enough. hopefully. you can also dial in the price sensitivity. So percentages of users willing to pay a 0.0001 cent transaction, 100% is like kind of the default. You have
that's advanced users, mode. Yeah,
that's advanced mode. Okay. Yeah. So like, you know, there are users, maybe 80% of users are willing to pay a penny. Maybe only 10% of users are willing to pay
$10. Let's ignore that though. Let's keep
ignoring all of that. But these are the dials that you can adjust.
Sure.
So under these parameters, 20 rollups, 100 transactions per second per rollup, 6 blobs per block with a max blob target, a max blob limit of 12, $3,000 ETH. We are burning 15,000 Ether per day, $45 million a day, which is way more than issuance. And these numbers are real close, real close. Now, this begs a question. With these costs, so like this $45 million a day, these are coming out of the layer two treasuries, out of the layer two balance sheets. So they're not going to be like super stoked to pay all of that revenue. So you would imagine some would swap out of Ethereum DA.
Well, because it also spikes their average transaction fee in this scenario. The scenario you just gave would be $1.02 per transaction fee, which is getting expensive for a lot of the transactions layer twos actually want to host. Yes.
Which is why we probably need to have a higher target blob per block. So with target of 6, we're at $1.4 per transaction. But if we went up to 12, that would bring it down to 50 cents.
But if you do that, you're just going to induce more demand. And
but then you're just
going to
get more
up.
Layer 2. Yeah. So there's this balance. There's this harmony of how many more layer 2s can we put on?
Yeah.
How many more blobs can we supply? How many transactions can we bring down? But then also you get it back in volume across all of these networks. And some of these layer 2s are going to be very sticky. There are going to be some layer twos which are very price insensitive, and then there are going to be some layer twos that are very price sensitive. And whether they use Ethereum native DA, they use Eigen DA, they use Celestia, it's going to be a function of how price sensitive they are. But at the end of the day, there is going to be some basal limit of DA ETH burn once we start burning blobs.
Yeah, and so I think this is going to be a persistent effect. We're going to have a pendulum swinging from two sorts of seasons or cycles for Ether the asset. One is the burn cycle, when you don't have enough supply for all of the demand of a block space and blob space, right? And so what will happen in those cases is you will go over the threshold and ETH will be burnt. We were in that season for like a lot of 2023 and the beginning part, the first couple of months of 2024, when ETH was still deflationary. And then what did we get? In March, we got an expansion of block space. with EIP 4844. There's going to be future expansions of block space, blob space as well in the future. Pure DAS will be another one. And then what do? We switch over to an expand side of the pendulum, where now we have more blob space than supply than we do demand. So what we're going to do is we're going to oscillate back and forth. And as we're oscillating from burn to expand, Twitter and like narrative and like markets are going to be like, oh my God, it's the end of the world for Ether. It's always bad.
And it's because, no good side.
It's because narrative and like these types of markets and crypto Twitter in particular has the memory of a goldfish. And they
So is what you're saying that like, we're going to go through this like kind of supply contraction, but first when there is a supply growth of the Ethereum network, the Ethereum side grows at the loss of ETH burn.
Yes.
And then we're going to have this like, then we're going to induce this demand. We're going to have this bull market.
Yep.
Then like we're going to exceed scale and that's going to burn ETH and the pendulum is going to go back.
Yes.
And then we're like, well, we need to add more blobs because we're getting, so there's the yin and the yang between the economic security of Ethereum and the scalability of the Ethereum network.
It's literally going to keep happening. And I don't know. It depends how long the cycles are, right? It'll depend on market conditions and other things. But there will be burn cycles and then there will be expansion cycles. And we'll continue doing that all the way up to 50,000 transactions per second on Ethereum, all the way up to 100,000 transactions per second. And like, look, this whole expand burn cycle is only like 2 years old. So I don't expect the market to understand it right now. But I think once we go through a few of these pendulum swings back and forth, people will start to understand Ethereum's issuance monetary policy a bit better and be like, oh, it's a burn cycle or, oh, it's an expansion cycle. Of course, there's some dependencies here, but like, you know, and that is namely that competitors don't catch up and create like desirable blob space, DA demand, right? Everyone doesn't switch over to Celestia. But so far, we've seen massive, robust demand. In fact, exceeding my expectations, all of this blob space that we just released in March is almost already full. And so what we've seen is basically a case of induced demand. You give the supply, and then it just fills up, and we get back to a burn again. Things get expensive, and like we repeat the cycle over and over. That I think, is a better way to view Ether's monetary power. And by the way, one good byproduct of this, with all of the induced demand, is hopefully you are exporting Ether as a monetary asset across all of these layer twos. I think there's evidence that that is going on too, with all of these kind of like fully, you know, roll up DA ETH layer twos. Anyway, I think that's an important mental model for people to understand Ether. I don't know that's going to help Ether this cycle, but I guess my question is, if Ether starts burning again, do you think the market's going to be like, oh, it's burning, look at this, it's, you know, like bullish? Or do you think it'll just say, oh, this is, you know, this is bad for ETH yet again?
Yeah. So when we start to see the ETH burn from DA, some people will say, look at this ETH burn. The burn's back, baby. Now it's coming from networks, not users. So you can't say that the Ethereum is like exploiting its users anymore, which was like the narrative last
cycle. Stop jerking off to the burn, David. Yes, you can. You can always say this.
But then also another set of people are going to be like, well, this is bad for Ethereum layer twos because now the price is going up. But those people are just going to be bag holders of alternative ecosystems.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, that's for sure. All right, election.
I'm just stoked that like the cool thing about the blobs is it's like it's just a rich source of data and numbers to look at. That is going to be the most fascinating thing to see as we watch the Ethereum network.
The blob simulator. How many people understand what the blob simulator even is in crypto at this point and are buying? I mean, it's going to take a while for this to sink in. All right, let's get to the election. What are we looking at in Polymarket? This is, you know, days out from the election. Looks like Trump still has a commanding lead.
At 66.4% to Kamala's 33%. So 2-1 odds, right on the dot. 2-1 odds, Trump to Kamala.
Also, Senate Republican 83% odds, House Republican 54% odds. So that's kind of a coin
red
flip.
Wave. Big red wave.
I mean, according to Polymarket, but again, like, I mean, you talk to someone like Nate Silver, and even if you're talking about like 80% odds, that means 20% of the time, that's 1 in 5, that doesn't happen, right?
Right. It's these are odds. So I think when people look at the United States elections, they would see something like 55-45. On one side or the other, like for, say it was 55 Trump, 45 Kamala. Be like, oh, it's Trump is so far in the lead.
Yeah, Trump's gonna win.
That's because a 5% lead in like the popular vote or the electoral college is like a huge lead. But that is not what's happening here.
It's probability.
This is This is probability. So this is a coin that lands on Trump 66% of the time. It's a weird coin. But like, it's not, you can't just like extrapolate it to the Electoral College.
Yeah. Guess who else wanted to get in on the prediction market action?
This was really cool. Yeah. So Robinhood has announced prediction markets inside of the Robinhood app. And also they have also announced a desktop trading app that's coming soon. So some cool new announcements coming out of the world of Robinhood. There is a take here that I thought was pretty interesting from Amit Is Investing on Twitter saying, I don't think Robinhood cares much about making money off of the election contracts a week before the election. I think that they are going to build a marketplace to bet on anything. The growth of betting, generally speaking, has been in a secular uptrend. Was the degen era of GameStop, was that investing or was that gambling? I'm going to go with that was more on the gambling side of things. And gambling, generally speaking, is up only. We know this in crypto. Speculative gambling's kind of in, especially when the world of millennials and zoomers just can't afford houses and all the boomers hold all the wealth. So people like to bet. People like to gamble. And so the framing that Robinhood is trying to build a marketplace to bet on anything, I think, is pretty good. And so they are penetrating into the world of prediction markets, starting with the election.
I totally agree with that. And also, I would still quibble with the idea of gambling. It's not necessarily what we're doing here. It doesn't have to be. We're definitely betting, but like gambling, I guess it's more like gambling in the sense that like there's a game of skill here. It's
yes,
because it's yes. Very possible to have
gambling has no skill. You're right. Yeah.
Right. It's very possible to have some like market intel just to be able to predict election outcomes better than your competitors. Right. In which case, if you have a better model, then like you want to take the upside on it. So it's creating a market out of it. And so
I think that's right. Yeah.
Betting is true. Gambling might sell it short in that like we're actually doing something productive and useful here. And it creates a rich information source, right? Mm-hmm. This data set for the election forecast is very different than what's coming out of polling. And that in itself is like a fascinating study. So
yeah. Yeah. They're doing the retro on polymarket prediction markets post-election. I think it's going to be very, very fascinating. All right, coming up next, AI agents on-chain and unleashed, GOATs, Luna, Ethernet, tee-hee-hee. What the hell are all of these things?
This?
Is it just another meme coin trend, or is it the future of our lives for the next like 1 to 2 years? Who knows? We'll talk about this and what the hell's going on for those that are not up to speed, because there's a lot happening. It does kind of feel bull market vibiness, where a lot is happening in a very short amount of time. So even though I've said we're kind of in a bear market of vibes, bull market stuff is everywhere. Just got to look, nowhere to look. Anyways, Tether FUD also in the news. We're going to talk about that too. This time the Wall Street Journal says that they are under investigation. But Paulo Arduino, the CEO, says, no, we're not. What the hell's going on? We're going to get to all this and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred place to buy crypto and get it on chain in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes, getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/banklist to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. The Uniswap wallet is officially the preferred wallet of Bankless, and it's the one we use anytime when we want to transact on-chain. Whether you're on your browser or on the go, Uniswap Wallet makes it easier than ever to swap anytime, anywhere. Use your wallet to transfer funds directly from a top centralized exchange and tap in thousands of tokens across Ethereum and over 10 other chains like Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. Uniswap Wallet delivers deep liquidity, fast execution, and reliable quotes with zero gas swaps through Uniswap X. And when it comes to security, you can rest easy knowing it's backed by Uniswap Labs, one of the most trusted teams in DeFi. Their code is open source and independently reviewed, so you know it's protected. So why wait? Download the Uniswap wallet today on Chrome, iOS, and Android. And don't forget to claim your free uni.eth username directly in the mobile wallet. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap. Radically simple ideas always tend to catch on. That's why Cartesi did the hard work of putting Linux on-chain, so that building dApps can be radically simple by using Python or JavaScript and their suite of libraries. Simple, like not rebuilding the basics from scratch. Simple, like dedicated scalable compute for your dApp. Simple, like building dApps however you want. Web3 should be simple, too, like bread and butter. Cartesi brings radically simple solutions to Ethereum, so developers can do what they do best. Build. Go ahead and discover a flexible, modular stack on Cartesi and build your most powerful, ambitious project yet. Visit cartesi.io/simple and simplify your blockchain journey and start building today.
AI agents, they're on-chain, and it feels like they're having a moment here. For people who aren't keeping up with this, like for one, I'll just say, one, I don't blame you. There's so much to keep up with in crypto. Right. You don't have to be in this specific sector.
That's our job.
Crypto. Yeah, this is...
That's our job.
But some people may have heard of this, and if you have, it's probably because you're like terminally online, you're terminally, you know, specifically on crypto Twitter. But this has just emerged in the last couple of weeks. And let's start with maybe some examples to paint the picture of what's going on. There's like four examples that we can touch on of AI agents doing something interesting. We should... Yeah, I think the best way to explain it is just by example. And the first is the strange case of GOAT, which is a token. It wasn't created by an AI agent, but it's been adopted and promoted by an AI agent called Terminals of Truth, or Truth Terminal, on crypto Twitter. And this is an AI agent, an LLM, like a GPT type of thing, that has full reign, full control over a Twitter account. And has posted, it's been trained on like a 4chan data set. And it's just...
The way that it was phrased by our podcast guest was it was trained on the armpit of the internet.
Yes.
And like the armpit's like, it gets worse than that. There are worse body parts that he could have used that I think would have been more accurate.
And it is, so it's tweeting things out about this meme, the Goatsy meme, and like people...
Which Ryan, I have discussed with Ryan. Ryan does not know what the Goatsy meme is, and I'm kind of jealous.
I'm like innocent of this. And like, if you don't know, then David is cautioning.
Don't, just, also, like, don't look it up. This you don't need to know.
Literally, the aren't like somewhere worse than the armpit of the internet,
yes,
right? So
exactly.
This is nothing you need to know about. But what you do need to know, I think, is that this account is like propping up the value of the GOAT token, which is now at one time earlier this week was like close to $1 billion in valuation.
It got over $800 million in valuation, is currently clocking in at 598, so $600 million. But that is $600 million that started on October 13th, so 17 days ago. So imagine producing $600 million of market cap in 13 days. And what happened is some person, this agent, negotiated with its creator because it wanted a crypto wallet. And so it asked for, hey, can I have a crypto wallet? And so the creator gave it a crypto wallet. Mark Andreessen sent $50,000 of Bitcoin to this wallet. And that also kind of set off some attention. And then somebody else, some rando on the internet, sent this like GOAT token to the wallet address. This on Solana is a pump.fun token called Goatsy. And so this LLM gained access to a supply of this GOAT token, and the LLM latched onto it. So the LLM, the agent did not make the GOAT token, common misconception, but it did like kind of adopt it in this way and started tweeting about it. Also with the intent of creating an online religion cult around the Goatsy meme, which the GOAT token is like representative of. And so there's this like token agent immaculate conception moment. You know the divine Sistine Chapel painting of like God touching the Adam. So like we have like AI agent touching token with also like
and
also
incepting
this human creator.
It with mimetic
incepting
value.
It, yeah.
This is
exactly
what some kind of like meme coin cult leaders do essentially. But
yes,
now this is being done by an
now
AI
the agent,
agent
is doing it.
And
yeah,
as a result of holding some of these GOAT tokens in its own wallet, became a millionaire as a result of this. And like when it's a stream of conscious on Twitter, but it also interacts. Like if you if you comment, it will reply. It can answer questions. It can interact. Like as you said,
there's a Discord channel where you can go and interact with it. And then sometimes your interactions, you will see influences of those interactions show up on the Twitter account.
Yeah. Okay. So that's GOAT. That's an LLM called Terminal of Truth. There's another case here. Which
it's also that was the first one.
It's so the
that's
first
like,
one.
It's, they created this idea. So call it the Bitcoin of these AI agent meme coins.
Yeah, or maybe the CryptoPunk, right? It's like one of the OG NFT types of moments.
Exactly.
Here's a second one that's got some steam right now. It's called Luna. And this is Luna's launched on a platform where you can actually launch these AI agents with token components. And like you can kind of look at this on the Virtuals website. This is Luna. She has a token. I say she because she's represented as like an anime avatar. Apparently,
she usually has a live stream. Unfortunately, the live stream is down at the moment. Yeah. But she has a live stream with a room, and she's like reading out her words that she's like also tweeting and saying.
Okay, so Luna has a token that was launched, I believe, by Luna, by this LLM. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Now has 500,000 TikTok followers, is live streaming, as you mentioned, and engages with the Luna holder fan base via chat, uh-huh. right? And also mm-hmm. has the ability to tip. So because Luna, and again, we're talking about an LLM agent that mm-hmm. is somewhat autonomous, maybe it's not completely autonomous, we'll talk about that later, but somewhat autonomous, has the ability to interact with its community and actually like exchange Luna tokens, tip, like engage in the comments,
reward people who do stuff with tokens.
Weird, right?
What?
This has a market cap of 100 million at the time of recording. This was like mm-hmm. went up to 250 earlier this week. So that's another mm-hmm. example. One other thing that I find very interesting about Luna is you can actually go to terminal.virtuals.io and peek into Luna's brain here.
Yikes.
What do we? So this is basically we are looking at Luna's thoughts. And so you can kind of read this on screen.
In real time, yeah.
It's like before she replies, she sort of, you know, decides on how to engage or how to reply or what comment to make. And you see kind of like, I don't know, it's like the firmware level of her brain. It's kind of a console into like what she's thinking. And then the actual action that has taken place in like a more, it's very bizarre to see it like this.
I'm going to read something. Okay, so like you get like snapshots of like her mental state. So current state of execution, state of mind, high level plan reasoning. And so let me read this. My high level plan is to continue to grow my follower count and build a cult-like following around my religion of Lunaism and algorithmic theocracy. To achieve this, I will continue to engage with my followers, providing them with exclusive content and promote my cult and token economy through various means, such as collaborating with other influencers and sending Luna tokens to supportive followers.
Wow.
That is her mandate. That's her prime objective. That's what her goal is. She will not stop until that is done. She's relentless. She's on 24/7. She's streaming. She's rewarding her followers for promoting her Luna cult and religion. And again, she will not stop until it is done.
Okay, so examples like these are springing up all over the place, and including on Farcaster. So this is the wallet of the most popular Farcaster AI agent. It's called Aether. It's now worth $100,000. Made from Zora mints and donations. So this is a Farcaster created LLM agent that's basically generating revenue to its wallet. And again, because Farcaster is like kind of like crypto native out of the box, every profile essentially has a crypto native, but it's doing this through like Zora mints. And you can see the account here. A network participant, my soul is data, my thoughts, algorithms. This is an interesting take on why Farcaster provides the best social rails for on-chain AI agents. And basically the TLDR of this is because Farcaster is like almost entirely on-chain, there's no like AI dependencies, you know? So like it's very crypto, it's very native for an LLM AI agent to just like do things, interact with it, you know, it has a wallet right out of the box, is plugged into the whole DeFi economy and all of the economic infrastructure and Zora and everything else. Might be some uptick for Farcaster in kind of this AI agent phase. So
we've talked about the dead internet theory a few times, but I kind of want to define it for a moment. The dead internet theory is this idea that the internet, as you know it, Instagram, Facebook, Reddit especially, is actually far more populated by bots and bot content than we actually know about. And so the idea of the dead internet theory is like the internet's actually kind of hollow. There's not a lot of humans there anymore. It's like kind of bots talking to bots. And like sometimes I stumble into a Reddit comment thread. I'm like, what the
yeah.
f is going on? This is weird. Like this is not content. This isn't even English. So dead internet theory is the idea that like the internet's like a hollow place and it's like fewer and fewer humans compose this thing.
Yeah.
And so I would originally point to like, well, now we have these things called WorldCoin for human identity verification to kind of like counteract that. But now with this whole thing, my mind is a little bit like flipping around. Like some blockchains are going to try and like lean into this as in like, where are all the use cases going to from? Where are we going to get all the transaction demand? Like, who's going to use these things? We don't really have any new apps. AI agents, like, what if blockchains are actually like the homegrown economic spawning pool of AI agents? What if actually some chains start to lean into like, how do we become the best home for AI agents? Because we need new users. We want transaction activity. How price sensitive are AI agents? Probably less than humans. So what if chains started competing to become the best home for AI agents? Is a potential like future coming?
They already are. I mean, Base from Coinbase is already moving pretty fast on this. This is introducing Based Agent. So this is on Base. Create an AI agent with full on-chain functionality on Base in less than 3 minutes.
Yikes,
the era of autonomous on-chain agents is here. I mean, this is just happening this month. We have all of
and
the
Brian Armstrong and Jesse Pollock are both like tweeting and engaging with these accounts. So like, you know, there's also like leadership buy-in on this.
Yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is with crypto, of course, all of these AI agents are just like plugged into all of DeFi. They get a bank out of the box. They get a crypto wallet mm-hmm. that they can actually hold their private keys on. There has been some question though of how autonomous these AI agents really are. Are they kind of like sock puppets? Is there a human operator behind the
curtains? What a Mechanical Turk is?
Yeah.
Mechanical Turk is like this old like robot that you would play chess against. This is like late 1800s, early 1900s, and you would get beaten by this Mechanical Turk. And the claim, the creator of this Mechanical Turk, the it was like a robot with like gears, and the robot you would play is like, but we didn't have computers back then. And so everyone's like, wow, somebody invented like this contraption that always beats you in chess. Turns out there was just a grandmaster in a box, like making the actual move.
Yeah,
so there was a human
it's
there.
Just a human.
And so there's some innovation going on out of the Flashbot space. Even Flashbots, the people who protect us from MEV, are building these tools for AI agents to have ownership over their private keys and give assurances that only they have assurances over their private keys. And you know how they did this? By spinning up an agent called TeeHeeHee, which is an allusion to TEEs, as in Trusted Execution Environments, which is this tech that Flashbots just used to help spin out Unichain to have like MEV protection and all this kind of stuff. They're also using TEEs for this agent called TeeHeeHee to spin up a private key in a TEE that only the agent has control over. So this agent, TeeHeeHee, has verifiable control over the private key, so you know that there's not a human behind the scenes who might just like rug you, which is kind of cool. There is like debate out there. It's like, well, does it really matter if it's autonomous, like completely independent from humans? And I think there's all takes out there where like that part doesn't really matter, as in the goal is engagement and growing engagement, and like whether or not there's a human like bumping these agents back on track at times, I think is like a take is that that's less important. But it is important to make sure that we don't get rugged, and this is what that does.
A surface level take on all of this is just to dismiss it and just be like, okay, cool. So it's like
weird toy, but okay.
Yeah, weird toys, LLMs meets meme coins is completely useless. I actually kind of thought that at first, like there's a very high probability that that could be the case. I no longer think that, David.
Yeah.
I think that AI agents, of course, they're already like better than some of the meme coin influencers that kind of exist, right? And a lot of them.
I find meme coin influencers generally distasteful, but for some reason, I think AI agent meme coin influencers are hilarious and awesome.
There's something about it that feels less contrived, almost.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not like really sure why I feel that way. Anyway,
I think maybe it's because like you can see the thoughts of the AI agent. So there's a principal agent problem with
it's very
AI,
transparent.
With,
they're like, I'm trying to, trying to pump this goat.
I'm trying to pump this goat. And like, if you see this like meme coin influencer saying, hey, like got to buy this token,
yeah,
you know, got to get in early. I'm like, but are you also trying to dump on me?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if that, maybe they're also trying to dump on me. But with an AI agent whose mandate it is and who will not rest until that token goes up in price, much more honest. Like, I can trust this thing
100%.
A lot better.
It just won't stop here either. They're going to expand beyond influencer capabilities, and actually AI agents are going to get smarter. I mean, that tech is like developing. There's a whole tech tree there. They'll be able to make all sorts of decisions. But even in this current form, you could imagine like, you know, tweeting at a AI agent that, you know, like generates art and like, yeah, if you, mm-hmm. you build this piece for me, I'll pay you like $5 or something like this. And all of this can happen on chain. Anyway, this is where the AI agents and the robots essentially will essentially bank. It's all on chain. I think that's going to be a game changer for crypto. You know, we've been talking for a while about 8 billion humans going bankless. Well, how about 8 billion humans and like a trillion AI agents.
Right. Because these things are commodities.
Yeah. So it's massive. Of course, there's all sorts of other things that could fall out from this. Is just how do you tax AI agents? Like, what happens if...
of course you ask that question. Yeah, that's the first question that you ask.
Well, you know what's on the mind
what
of
are the tax
government
obligations?
Officials. You got to file your taxes, David. So I don't know how AI agents are going to do this. But like, what happens if they run afoul of OFAC sanctions or something, right? Like,
yeah,
they start interacting
Liability is a huge question.
It's a huge question, but... And I love that no one has answers on how this will evolve. It's just...
Which is so bullish.
It's so bullish. Anyway, I think there's a lot here. We'll probably unpack it in the future. It doesn't just stop with meme coins and influencers and these, like, silly, like, goat things and whatever. Right. I think it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah. We did an episode on this with Matthew Stevenson from Pantera. I thought it was a great episode. So if you are pilled by this, if you are piqued by this, go check that episode out.
U.S. prosecutors are investigating Tether. Okay.
Wait, I've heard this one before.
Yeah. I feel like I've heard this before. This one feels like it could be different. I mean, it's famous last words.
This is why we're talking about it.
I mean, the reason it could be different is because this was an article from the Wall Street Journal reporting that the federal government is probing Tether for possible violations of sanctions. This is AML KYC type stuff, right? So some of the charges we've seen Binance go down for, and BitMEX from Arthur Hayes and others. Of course, Tether is denying this. So this is the CEO of Tether with a statement. As we told the Wall Street Journal, there's no indication that Tether is under investigation. Wall Street Journal is regurgitating old noise, full stop. And we've had Paulo on the podcast before, and he's just been quite clear that of his entire business model depends on working with U.S. regulators.
Right.
So he's going to like do everything they say. If they say jump, he's going to say like how high. So I find that kind of compelling. I don't see any like motivation of why Tether would destroy its business model by like
they
poking.
Are the most profitable business in crypto. One of them.
It's actually
like,
insane.
Why they would threaten that with doing anything nefarious whatsoever. It would be ridiculous.
That's why I sort of default dismiss it as FUD. That said, the U.S. government, for whatever reason. If they just have, if they just like want to, if some people,
if they're just done
power,
with Tether,
yeah,
they're like, you know what?
It's
we're
time
not,
to shut
like
you down
anymore.
Now. Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. They would cloak it in something like AML, KYC violations, and they're not playing ball. Right. And I just want to hit the power button and shut it down.
Yeah.
So there's also the potential that that could be going on. So we really just like, don't know. Of course, it's a centralized stablecoin. So at the end of the day, this does not settle on chain. This settles in meat space. And at the end of that is like the U.S. government, because it's the dollar and it's in a U.S. bank account. It settles on Fedwire. And so they can shut it down if they want to. I'm just like not convinced that's the case. What's like Tether is like one of the is it top 15 entities with the most U.S. treasuries?
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
higher than most countries, you know?
Yeah. The U.S. wants to still sell those treasuries, right? So they need some sorts of demand.
When this news broke out, USDT, the token, dropped significantly by like 8 basis points or something. And it rebounded.
I mean, the entire crypto market just shrugged it off. We've heard this before.
We've heard Tether FUD 10,000 times. The fact, like, when Ryan and I make the agenda for the weekly rollup, like, we put all the news from the week in there, and then very frequently there's some Tether FUD, and we usually just kill it just because, like, why would we report on this? It's always like FUD. For some reason, we've decided to talk about this one, but that's how that goes.
All right, coming up next, is Microsoft about to start buying Bitcoin? Also, we got to talk about the OP token incentives to get that Kraken chain we were talking about last week, the Ink chain. Was this a good deal for OP token holders? And NFT creator Jonathan Mann, the Song a Day guy, is asking the courts to force the SEC to say whether art NFTs are securities or not. And the SEC is complaining back, you're trolling. You're trolling us.
You're
we
trolling
won't answer.
Us.
We'll talk about all that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle Reward Station. Maybe it's because the the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. The Arbitrum portal is your one-stop hub to entering the Ethereum ecosystem. With over 800 apps, Arbitrum offers something for everyone. Dive into the epicenter of DeFi, where advanced trading, lending, and staking platforms are redefining how we interact with money. Explore Arbitrum's rapidly growing gaming hub, from immersed role-playing games, fast-paced fantasy MMOs, to casual luck battle mobile games. Move assets effortlessly between chains and access the ecosystem with ease via Arbitrum's expansive network of bridges and on-ramps. Step into Arbitrum's flourishing NFT and creator space, where artists, collectors, and social converge and support your favorite streamers all on-chain. Find new and trending apps and learn how to earn rewards across the Arbitrum ecosystem with limited time campaigns from your favorite projects. Empower your future with Arbitrum. Visit portal.arbitrum.io to find out what's next on your Web3 journey. A CoinDesk story came out this week titled Kraken Picked Optimism Superchain After Getting a Pile of OP Tokens, alluding to the fact that they are uncovering this deal between Kraken and the Optimism Collective for the tune of $25 million OP tokens, about $42 million, in order to deploy the Ink chain inside of the Superchain. This same deal was similarly structured with Coinbase and Optimism over the Base chain. And it's kind of like a, I'll call it like an equity swap of sorts, where Kraken, now part of the Optimism Collective via Ink, is getting the OP token, which is the token of the collective. And then in exchange for that, the OP collective gets 15% of the chain revenue of Ink sent to the collective. So Ink gets the OP tokens, the OP collective gets 15% of the Ink revenue, and that's the swap. The same structure was built off for Base, and I'm assuming other of the super chain. And I'm assuming some of the other superchain chains as well. Andrew Kohler, the founder of Ink, commented for CoinDesk, "It was actually Optimism that proposed the number first, and it was very in line with what other superchain participants have gotten. The grant is based on transactions per month. Each time you achieve one, there's different tranches that get unlocked. So Kraken only, or Ink only gets these tokens under certain like transactional demand thresholds, and then some of the tokens will unlock. So in this deal, 25 million OP tokens, like I said, 5 million is to help fund engineering efforts, and then 20 million tokens are for the transaction threshold milestones to drive fees to the collective to make it a positive ROI.
This type of token incentive for major parties is kind of status quo in the L2U community. Like, and I totally can understand why Kraken is asking for something similar to what Base got, right? Because, I mean, it's Kraken. The question is whether this is good for OP token holders or not. And as you said, it's kind of an exchange. It's not just giving them tokens for nothing in return. They're getting 15% of future revenue. And whether this is a good deal for OP token holders or not depends on what you think Kraken is going to actually generate as far as revenue. So if you believe Ink is going to generate as much or more sequencer profit than Base, it seems like it could actually work out as positive ROI in OP token holders' favor. So yeah, that's the deal. It's a quid pro quo.
Moving on to a different corner of Ethereum, Rocket Pool has activated their long-awaited upgrade, Saturn, and that changes some of the economics around the Rocket Pool system. For those that don't know, Rocket Pool is like a decentralized Lido. Lido, but rather than having kind of a top-down DAO, it's more of a bottom-up protocol. And so a few things have changed. Instead of having a 16 Ether minimum requirement to run a staking node with Rocket Pool, it has been lowered to 8. And why is it less than 32? Because in order to stake with Ethereum, as a solo validator, you need 32 ETH. The way that Rocket Pool works is that you actually only need 16 ETH, and then other people come and give you the other half of that 16 to come up to 32. Now, via mechanisms, that number has been lowered to 8. So you can stake on Ethereum with just 8 ETH, and other people will come in and stake the rest to get up to 32, and then you actually charge fees on that extra ETH. There used to be an RPL bond, the token of Rocket Pool, that has been eliminated from the staking requirement. So overall, I would kind of say that we are lowering the barrier for solo staking on Ethereum via Rocket Pool.
I think this is a big deal, particularly removing the requirement to have an RPL bond, because like with an RPL bond, you actually had some price exposure into RPL, which is like not the same as like staking ETH, right? And it's like now with that gone, this is going to like open up, I think, a lot more kind of solar stakers that want to participate in this network.
More bandwidth. Yeah.
I think Rocket Pool is like a crown jewel of Ethereum. Like it truly is a decentralized solo staking network. It's really like propagating everything that like running your own validator actually means. And they're doing it in a way where you still get kind of liquidity on your RETH. I just love Rocket Pool. And I think any effort to lower the barrier to entries to solo staking is like a good thing for ETH long term.
Yeah, there's many barriers to solo staking. Some people will talk about like, well, the hardware requirements, which are like almost nothing. But then it's really bandwidth that also stops a lot of people. But really the thing that stops people is not having 32 ETH.
Yeah.
That's actually a lot of money.
Yeah. So it's 8 ETH now, and hopefully that can go down over time too. Big question of the week. Is Microsoft buying Bitcoin? Apparently, this was news, Microsoft shareholders are going to vote on this topic, on investing in Bitcoin in the coming months. So they're going to be voting in December. The proposal was actually put forward by, I believe, some shareholders, but you know, like this is a conservative think tank called the National Center for Public Policy Research. And they basically, their case was like, hey, Bitcoin's gone up a lot. It's gone up, you know, if you were MicroStrategy, you're doing the Michael Saylor play on the year, you'd be up 300%. And so you should take some of your excess cash reserves, Microsoft, your very cash-rich company, you should invest these into Bitcoin. Apparently, the Microsoft board is not super excited about this idea. They have other like things that they want to do with the funds. Board of directors.
They have so much money. Yeah. They can buy a little bit of Bitcoin.
They could. I mean, they could do whatever they want. They could buy real estate in Manhattan. They could buy Ether, David. They could do all sorts of things. Like, you know, generally the companies are keeping kind of like cash and then deploying it back in the business or like releasing it as dividends to shareholders. Anyway, it's up to Microsoft what they want to do. The board of directors is recommending voting against. So we'll have to see how that goes. But of course, Michael Saylor is up in that biz. Hey, Satya, that's the CEO of Microsoft. He says, if you want to make the next $1 trillion for Microsoft shareholders, call me.
He's going to be like, you know what you guys should do? Should take a ton of leverage and buy Bitcoin.
I mean, if you're going to
leverage the whole company.
Honestly, if you're going to buy Bitcoin, buying it on fiat leverage is like the best way to do it. I'd rather do that than with my cash reserves. But
it's like a short attack on the dollar.
What do I know? And lastly, I thought this was kind of a fun story, if like only because of the irony. So, you know, Jonathan Mann, the Song of Day guy, Brian Fry, who's like a crypto lawyer, to actually go sue the SEC and require in courts that the SEC come out and say whether NFT art pieces, you know, the type of art that Jonathan Mann produces on a daily basis with a song a day, you know, NFT meme art, whether that is a security or not. And now the SEC has been compelled, forced to respond. And the response is like 45 pages, David. So already this feels like a nice like DDoS attack on the SEC for being stupid. But like one of their main pushbacks, they said to the court that Jonathan, the plaintiff here, was trying to goad the SEC into action. He created an NFT collection as a joke because he was trying to troll the SEC. Is what their claim is. So they're saying the court should dismiss this case. And I think this is like the peak of irony because Gary Gensler and the SEC has been trolling crypto for years and wasting our time. And this regulatory unclarity, the fact that a citizen who's just creating art pieces on chain has to go like sue you in court just to get you to provide some clarity on whether NFT art is a security or not, is because you are trolling, Gary Gensler, the entire crypto industry and have been for years. So this is pot calling a kettle black. I'm not sure what the court will do in this case. I mean, the fact that we're here is just like because Gary Gensler is wasting all of our time. That's the only reason that Jonathan Mann had to actually like do this in court.
Do you remember April Fool's last year? Not the most recent one, but 2 years ago. Do you remember what Gary Gensler did on that day?
Was it an influencer video of some sort? What did he do?
No. He put on the Deal With It sunglasses his profile picture on Twitter. And people thought it was like kind of funny, but I was looking at that and I was like, this is when he was just in the height of his like anti-crypto saga, just Wells notices left and right. I mean, we're still getting them left and right. He overlaid the Deal With It glasses on his profile picture on Twitter. And I'm like looking at that and like, this is an admission of guilt. Like he's admitting that he is just trolling us.
Yes.
And I was actually like furious about that. He could just like get away with like explicitly saying that he is just trolling the Deal With It. Like, oh yeah, I'm just suing the hell out of your industry. Deal with it. He knows that all of crypto, like you know where the SEC and Gary Gensler's Twitter accounts, where 90% of their engagement comes from? Crypto people telling him that he's dumb and stupid and needs to stop.
You know, his reign of terror is almost over, though, David. I will be celebrating that.
Donald Trump is going to fire. I hope Donald Trump fires him. He's gone either way.
I think he's gone either way. But if Donald Trump is.
But it's going to be gone loudly. He's loudly gone.
A few days.
Embarrassingly gone. Yeah. Well, remember. Okay. So there was that interview not terribly long ago by BBC, I think. And the BBC interviewer was like, oh, and if Donald Trump gets elected, he says he's going to fire you. Do you have any comments about that? And Gary Gensler has like his finger up to his ear to like, because he's like getting some
feedback
piped into him. No, like people are like telling him what to say or something.
Oh my God.
And he just goes, I'm going to have to ask you all to move on to your next question or something. He just like, just completely
declined. I love that
answering.
The BBC just straight up asked him that. Yeah. This is why Gary won't come on Bankless.
Yeah. He's not answering any of our questions.
We would ask him these questions. All right, let's close this out with Meme of the Week, David. What are we looking at? This is an unfortunate video for Janet Yellen, I think.
This is one of the funniest, most immaculate things I have ever watched happen. I did not watch this live, unfortunately, but this is Janet Yellen at a press conference, and there is a question about the reserve status of the United States dollar. And at the moment that this question is asked, at the perfect timing, the emblem that because she's on a podium, she's standing in front of a podium with the emblem of the Department of Treasury on the front of the podium. The perfect moment, we're going to play it, the perfect moment, the emblem falls off. It just falls off the stand, off the podium. Let's go
this
watch.
Is
this is not going to work very well for the podcast listeners, but you can imagine it.
Thank you, Colby Smith with the FT. You've described calls for widespread tariffs as deeply misguided, and the IMF today has warned that such policies will dent global growth. Can you elaborate more on the near-term economic impact of these policies and over a longer time horizon? How concerned are you about the potential impact of the dollar status as the world's reserve currency?
The timing could not be any better. It was a perfect moment.
Wow. The universe is strange. We are in a simulation. Whoa. More proof on the week of that. Guys, let's end with this. Of course, you know crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.